This is On Location. I'm Joe Mamlin. Today's episode comes to you on location from Anchorage, Alaska and Washington, D.C. But first, On Location is produced by the NCA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Tim Leitner and me. You can find the podcast and subscribe on your favorite podcast app, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and many more. On today's show, we're pleased to welcome Raghavan Varadachari. Raghavan is the Director of State and Tribal Systems for the Office of Child Support Services. We're all, of course, interested in the future of child support systems, and Raghavan provides a perspective from the federal office and discusses the surge in modernization that's been going on since the pandemic. They talk about the role of OCSS in the process, and he also talks about the history of the program through the system lens and how automation has played such a significant role in the development and the success of the program. It's going to be a great show, so stick around and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to another edition of NCA On Location, where we're coming to you from Washington, D.C. and Anchorage, Alaska. I'm Tim Leitner in Anchorage, Alaska, co-chair of the NCA Communications Committee. On today's program, we're pleased to have with us, for the first time on the podcast, Raghavan Varadachari from the Federal Office of Child Support Services, better known as OCSS. He is joining us to have a conversation about the future of child support systems, a topic of interest to many in the child support community, and give a little more understanding, including a perspective from the federal office. Raghavan, welcome to On Location. We're pleased to have you. Would you please introduce yourself and let our listeners know a little bit more about you, your title, your role with OCSS, what you do there, and what has been your history with the child support program?
Sure. Greetings of the day. Thank you for having me, Tim. It's nice to be on location and share the federal insights on this podcast. I'm Raghavan Varadachari. I serve as the director for the state and tribal systems in the Office of Child Support Services. It's been about 10 years since I've been in this role. I have overseen many modernization projects in the last 10 years. And in particular, after the pandemic, we have seen a surge in the modernization efforts. We have a team of federal analysts who provide technical assistance from inception to completion and beyond. That includes pre-planning, planning, software development, certification of state systems, and operations and maintenance.
That's quite a bit on your plate. So as you start this conversation, it might be helpful to get a take on the history of the child support program. Can you remind us a little bit about where the child support program was born and established?
Absolutely. It's almost 50 years since child support system has been established. The program was signed into law as Title 4, Part D, Section 451 of 42 U.S.C. 651. And this was signed by President Ford at that time. It was signed into law to enforce support obligations owed by non-custodial parents, better known as NCP, to their children and the spouse or former spouse with whom the children are living. The second purpose of establishing the child support program was to locate non-custodial parents and to establish the paternity.
Yeah, it's almost crazy to think that it's almost been 50 years. I mean, there's a lot that's gone on. So as we think back a little bit about the evolution of systems and what that's been like, do you have any idea what systems looked like in the early days of the child support program?
Absolutely. These are typical mainframe applications, Tim. you know, running on large mainframes or mid-frames applications were running in COBOL, VMS, ISM, and, you know, DB2 as the databases. So when you look at these applications, you know, they are typically green screens, as the users would like to call it, where, you know, the navigation is difficult for many users because of the lack of user interface or user experience on these kind of screens. And to add to all the woes of it, you don't have any dashboarding view, like unlike the modern applications, like the web user interface.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking about the legacy system and how many of us have our iPhones and, you know, we browse on the web and then we go to work in the office. And all of a sudden that system, if it's still a legacy system or something that looks very much like that, is very, very different and very challenging. So it's kind of like the time or about time for states and counties and programs to update their systems and do that modernization, which many are.
Right. You're absolutely right on that, Tim. Users have been acclimated to various devices like smartphones, tablets, where the user interface has given a tremendous opportunity for users, wherein users that are acclimated to these kind of devices or user interface don't want to work on the mainframes.
Yeah. So Raghavan, any idea what states were the first to come on board with systems back in, I don't know if it was 1975 or shortly thereafter?
My best guess, Tim, would be that systems came in the early 1980s. Because, nobody was here at that time, right? So some systems came in before the Perora. Perora is, as you know, is the Personal Responsibility and Work Reconciliation Act. So since the 2000s, we started certifying the state systems. And so one of the first few systems to be certified was the mainframe systems, right? Like back in 2000 and 2001, the mainframes were still in vogue and still alive and kicking. So I don't remember the state that was, you know, first came into existence, but my wild guess would be like, you know, California, Texas, where the program was huge and the demand for computers was more.
Yeah, yeah. So Raghavan, what was the last state or so far, who's the last state to have modernized their systems?
That's a good question, Tim. There have been several states that have been modernizing. Modernization for child support systems started back in 2002 to 2004, where California was the first state to go through the whole process of modernization, followed by a couple of other states like New Jersey, New York, Delaware, and a few other states. So if you look at the past few states that came into production, well, I think some of the states like South Carolina, Massachusetts, Oregon, and a few others that are now coming to production in a few years' time.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, I think I've seen information about Virginia, Alaska, and even North Dakota are moving forward with their modernization projects.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the list of modernization projects, and I don't remember all at the top of my head, we have major modernizations going on in New York, Indiana, Texas, Virginia, Alaska, Hawaii, Ohio, and a few others.
It's a lot of activity.
Yeah.
So Raghavan, any idea, or might you have any idea, what is the state with the oldest system that's still not modernized or even working on modernization, but still has the oldest system out there?
So, Tim, we don't have any historical data on each state system that was implemented prior to 2004, right? The earliest information that's available is from 2004 onwards, and I do have a list of states that have been implemented since then. So, again, going back to the same topic of which state, was the oldest system, it's kind of difficult to predict what states could have been the oldest system. But we do still have a lot of states operating on their mainframes. And the Federal Office of Child Support continuously works with those states where there is mainframe applications still being used.
So talking about old systems, the legacy system, you mentioned it a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? You know, there's a recent article out there that I saw that said that the legacy system is an outdated operating system or software platform that is predicated on older programming language. What does that mean? What do people mean when they talk about the legacy system?
So, if you talk about mainframes in general, right, mainframes are not going away anywhere. It's been 25 years since the Y2K project was implemented, right? At that time, there was this talk of mainframes going away in a couple of years' time, but mainframes still do exist. We have to talk about the relevance of mainframes onto the child support systems, right? If you look at the history and the languages that were used in the mainframes, COBOL was predominantly the language that was being used there, with DB2 being the most prominent database in the mainframe area, right? Then came the IBM mid-range IBM AS400 with similar languages, but a different kind of operating system. So as I told you, the mainframes are going to remain in operation for a foreseeable future, but not for this industry, but for a different industry like banking sector, mortgages, financial systems, airline industry. They are still going to continue to use mainframes.
What are some of the challenges to the current legacy system? In fact, even throughout the years, they have gotten us here.
So the first challenge is to get resources. The lack of resources has been reported as one of the biggest challenges that the mainframe users continue to tell us.
And then let's talk too about what are some of the advantages. Certainly there's challenges. But there's also some really positives about mainframe systems or legacy systems. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Mainframe systems predominantly have a need for online transaction processing and faster processing of data, right? If you look at the financial sectors, the banking industry, the mortgage industry, the airline industry, the need for data is pretty high. I mean, there cannot be absolutely no latency on the data. And the amount of data that is being processed by this industry is phenomenal, which is unlike in the child support industry. You don't need a mainframe for a child support system.
Yeah. And then, Raghavan, talking about some of the drawbacks or some of the, maybe not just challenges, but some of the things such as the cost of maintenance and patches and that kind of thing. What are some of the issues with legacy systems in regards to keeping them current?
Yeah, you absolutely said it correctly, Tim. The high maintenance cost is one of the most prohibiting factors for the continuance of operations of a mainframe. If you look at a traditional mainframe operations, first is to get the resources. Second is the space and the real estate that is occupied by these mainframes. Most of the mainframes are on-premise, meaning it requires a lot of real estate. To keep it running 24/7 is going to take a lot of electricity. And also, the resources, as I said, are very scarce, and people are finding it difficult to run mainframes because of these three factors.
So as we go from traditional to modernization, what kind of architecture do you see being pursued, and what does the future hold for platforms?
So, Tim, it's a difficult question to answer. We are not seeing a preferred architecture, even a trend that we can draw any conclusions to. In the past 4 or 5 years, the states tended to go for the platform-based approach like Salesforce and Microsoft Dynamics, but there have been no successful implementation for these kind of platform-based approaches. Although Salesforce and Microsoft Dynamics are commercial off the shelf, again, as the like the mainframes, what I told you, they are not commercial mainframes off the shelf for child support industry.
And then what about some of the trends like cloud and edge computing? How does that kind of fit in, or what are some of the discussions or talks around those?
Many states have opted to go for cloud computing. with a view to keep the cost low, right? When it comes to cloud computing, as you know, the onus is on the cloud provider to keep the machines running and make it available with zero maintenance to the customer. So a lot of time and resources is being saved here when customers decide to go to the cloud. The advantage of having edge computing is that there is no latency in the data. So in the cloud computing, there may be a delay of about 2 to 3 seconds for the data to refresh, but sometimes could be proved very costly for any application. Again, we don't see that kind of effect on the child support industry because we don't need the data to be available immediately.
Yeah. So Raghavan, there's some other key kind of concepts that have been in the news lately, let alone just in the child support industry and being talked about. Can you tell us a little bit about AI or artificial intelligence and machine learning? You know, they're kind of getting some news time. What are these, and have there been any discussions around those as far as child support systems?
So, Tim, artificial intelligence and machine learning have been there for a long time. So, for example, Alexa and Siri doing continuous learning of your habits, turn on or off the lights in your house, adding skills to the Alexa app to know your routines, attempts to complete your emails while you are typing. Siri and Alexa are examples of generative AI to set up alarms, texts, and other reminders for you. So AI has been existing for a long time. If you look at Google Translator, it came into effect back in 2003 or 2004, and Siri came into effect from 2011. So all these are types of artificial intelligence that come into play, you know, replacing human intervention in many different areas.
And what about user-centric and adaptive design aims to improve the usability, accessibility, and personalization of operating systems and to respond to the changing needs and preferences of users? What are some of the challenges and benefits of these?
So UCD, user-centered design, and UX, the user experience, is basically going back to your requirements and asking your users what they want to see in the system, right? But this is one of the basic 101s of software development when users are being consulted and informed of all the decision-making throughout the design process. Back in the days when waterfall was in vogue, people never were consulted as to what they would like to see in the system. So the system requirements were done. It was established, you know, black and white and given to the vendors to develop a system. And the vendors go back to the drawing board, design the system, develop the system, and come back after 5 years to show the system. What was the disadvantage of the waterfall system was that the user perception is completely changed. I mean, there is a time elapse between what was given as requirements and what is now being asked for. So there's always this continuous battle of, I thought like I'm going to get a system like this, but what you're given me is totally off the chart, right? So UCD and UX, what happens is like people generally have the users' discussions, and they are consulted, informed of all the stages during the design process. With the result, what the user will get is a pretty good system.
Yeah. And you know, as I start thinking about these things too, I think every 4D director is thinking about security and privacy. And so I've got to ask a little bit about how protection of the operating system, the data, protecting users from unauthorized access, modification, or disclosure. Can you tell us about the importance of these, how these fit into the future of systems, and also how should the future of systems address security in implementing security within those new systems?
Sure. Excellent question, Tim. Security is of paramount importance and should be integral with the design process of any system, right? It should be protected from any malicious attacks, ransomware, malware, and protection of data that has the PII personally identifiable information, PII, and federal tax information is of utmost importance in any industry, let alone child support industry, right? So our focus when we ask the states to implement a system is to provide adequate time and build security in the system, right? I mean, there are various guidelines that are available. One of the things that come to my mind is a NIST 800-53 that sets the guidelines that controls required to develop secure and resilient federal systems. These controls comprise operational technical management standards that are vital for maintaining information systems, confidentiality, integrity, and availability. Added to this, we also have the IRS 1075, which aims to minimize the risk of loss, breach, or misuse of FTIs in the child support system.
So there's already a lot of requirements in place. They have to be maintained and ensure that they're within new systems. I've got to ask some questions too, really about what's happened in the recent couple, three, 4 years. We really can't discuss systems without thinking back to COVID-19 and the challenges of the pandemic. How did states and OCSS respond? What were some of the fears or concerns with taking hardware home to remote sites, employees at their kitchen tables, VPNs, personal routers, et cetera? What were some of the lessons learned from COVID that also have carried forward in use today?
So it was a very difficult period, even for the federal government. But for the federal government, the Telework Act passed in 2010. We were used to working from homes for once a week or twice a week. But for the state partners, it was kind of difficult. Even when you talk about the impact that it had to the federal systems, we were not up to scale on the whole concept of teleworking, I would say 5 days a week for X number of employees, right? We had to scale up the requirements, the VPNs capacity has to be scaled up, the servers need to be bought. So we had our own challenges. But for the states, it was a new concept for teleworking. And we had seen an increase in the number of requests for laptops, purchase of servers, tablets, cell phones, and the need for setting up VPNs. So it was a huge challenge for us, but we overcame all those challenges because of the federal laws. At the end of the day, if you look at it, bills need to be paid. And the child support payments need to reach those families. In the end, it was a win-win situation for everyone. And we had a good set of principles now to put in place where the future is taken care of. And, we won't have similar problems that we had during COVID-19.
So if looking at the past and now looking toward the future, what is the next paradigm shift in operating systems? What do you foresee the future to hold with child support systems? And what are a couple of features or ideas that you think are important for upcoming child support solutions?
So as I told you, I personally would like to for the states to take baby steps. And when I say baby steps, I think what I mean is that states need to come out of the mainframes and go into some kind of a web-based approach, and then look into other kinds of modern technologies like ChatGPT, artificial intelligence. I'm not saying that states should not look at it. Some states are already familiar with it, and I've been asked this question many times as to can we use artificial intelligence, and the answer is absolutely yes. But for states that are still in the mainframes, there's a long way to go. And as I told you earlier, we haven't seen any kind of trend towards any kind of preferred architecture. States that are talking to me now, two of the major states, they are still interested in transferring another state system that was developed in 2014 and 2019. So it's very difficult to predict what the future is going to look like. In terms of system modernization, But as we see trends, we will be keeping our state partners updated on the national landscape that we are seeing in the child support industry.
So with system modernization, what is the cost of modernizing that some states have been reporting?
So there are many factors that go on for the cost, right? So for any system to be developed, it's not the development cost that is being captured. You have pre-planning activities, you have planning activities, you have the planning vendor, you have the quality assurance vendor, you have the independent verification and validation vendor. So, and with many different aspects of system modernization, like replatforming and refactoring, transfer systems, platform-based systems, the cost can be varied. For example, many of the states that are doing the replatforming and refactoring have reported a cost in a range of $8 million to $16 million. For a transfer system, where states transfer another state system, the cost that has been reported to us is about $70 to $80 million. For platform-based approaches like Salesforce, the cost is about $60 to $70 million. And for enterprise resource planning software like SAP, the cost is about $100 to $150 million.
So kind of a wide range of costs or a variance of costs.
Yes.
How long does it take to complete a modernization project?
It takes anywhere between 3 to 5 years. Some states complete the project in 3 years, and it all depends on what type of modernization you're going through. If you're going through for replatforming, refactoring, that time is shortened to anywhere between 2 to 3 years.
Still quite a while for somebody that's like waiting, especially a line worker that's waiting for something new and fresh to come on. So it's not an instantaneous or a very quick project.
That is correct.
And then what are some of the non-monetary consequences of a modernization project?
Some of the consequences are like it's like a greater availability of resources. When you come off from the mainframe and you go to a graphical user interface, web-based platforms, there are many resources available in the marketplace for you to go and fetch them. Then the second non-monetary consequence is the time required to navigate through the screens. I mean, this is from a user's perspective, that the time required to navigate through the screens and the number of steps or clicks that is taken is considerably reduced than the mainframes.
Yeah. And are there any unintended consequences that states have been kind of finding as they go along that they weren't really anticipating?
No, I think there have been no unintended consequences. As we discussed earlier, today's workforce, they like to be working on modern systems. If you look at the college graduates that are coming out of colleges now, it's going to be like the Gen Z crowd where they want to work on web applications rather than going back 30 or 40 years ago where mainframes were in there. So you will find, you know, youngsters going into the modern web-based applications like developers, database administrators, and the technical people that work on, they would like to work on the current in-trend modern technologies rather than going back about 30 to 40 years ago.
Yeah, certainly can't blame them. So let's talk a little bit too about every child support program, every child support office has to do an annual 157 reporting to the feds or the federal office for basically their federal incentives. What impact would a new system have on reporting that data?
So there is going to be no impact on the reporting as well as the incentives, because you know the incentives are given to the states based on the achievement of the program, not on the systems. And if you talk about 157, that has to be reported. So whenever any modernization project goes on, people have dual systems. Like I may implement a new system, but at the back end, I would definitely have another system parallelly running across. So we usually tell the states that don't turn off the mainframes until you're sure that your new application is in production, is running, and have a dual system so that in case of backup, you can always revert back to the mainframes.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are those in the Child Support Program that are talking about what they would like to see the federal office assist with cost of system modernization. So it seems to always come up. People always ask, even though they may or may not know the answer. But can you share what OCSS's take to this is?
Sure. Tim, if you recall, back in the Obama administration, there was a push from the federal government to develop a system for the states and give it to the states to implement. This didn't go very well with our Office of Management and Budget, who didn't see or realize the cost savings to the federal government. But this was taken up twice by the OCSS commissioner at that point in time. But, OMB did not see the benefit of such a system to the states, and hence that project was scrapped. If you take, for instance, our tribal system, the model tribal system, it has a similar approach where we at the federal office have developed the model tribal system and given to the tribes to use it for free. We also pay for the cost of implementation of the tribal system onto the tribes. And it's given 100% federal share for implementing the tribal system. At this current time, we are not planning on anything to develop on our own and give it to the states, because when we did all this back in 2015 and 2016, there were not many states that were modernizing their state system. So there was a need for the federal government to think about various alternatives to cut down on the cost. But today, fast forward 5 years from 2015, since the pandemic, a lot of states, I do have about 35 states that are in the process of modernization at any point in time.
That's quite a big number.
Yes.
So, given all that we've talked about today, and as we wrap up our conversation, can you sum up what you believe the future of systems to be in the Child Support Program?
So there isn't anything to add or anything different that we would do. Federal government policies has always been to adapt to changes, which means adapting to newer technologies. But we haven't deviated from our core principles of providing our state partners with sustainable systems. And when I say sustainable, any modernization project has to be sustainable for at least 7 to 10 years. So if you look at our streamlined feasibility study, we ask the states to do the planning for at least 5 to 7 years post your production time, and also forecast the operations and maintenance for at least 7 to 10 years. The other thing that the federal government would like to see is cost reasonable and cost effective systems. Today, if you look at the marketplace and the estimates that I gave you for different types of modernization, the costs sometimes, it's unreasonable. So we would like that cost to come down. Our efforts in bringing our state partners together to educate them on the cost, which is reasonable, which is effective. It's an ongoing discussions that we have with the states to make sure that they know what they pay and they get the software for what they paid.
Well, we want to thank our guest today, Raghavan Viradachari from the Federal Office of Child Support Services. Thank you for your insight and perspective on the future of systems, as many programs are in the process of modernizing their systems. We appreciate our listeners for catching not only this episode, but every episode that comes out week after week. On behalf of the NCA Communications Committee, I'm Tim Leitner, and this has been On Location.
Well, thanks again very much to Raghavan for joining us on the show today. I know he's got a very packed schedule with all that's going on in modernization, and we appreciate him making the time. And special thanks to Tim Leitner, as always, for his work in the producing and editing of the episode. On Location is available on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. We have a lot of great episodes on the way, so be sure to subscribe and check out our previous work as well. We also appreciate your ratings, feedback, comments, and suggestions. If you have an idea for a topic or would like to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us using the contact link on our website. On Location is a production of the NCIA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Tim Leitner and me. Thanks for joining me. I'm Joe Mamlin, and this has been On Location.